If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Medicine in America, hosted by Anthony Manson and Todd Harrington, shares the stories of physicians, other healthcare professionals, and industry leaders who are changing the way we deliver care. There's an episode that you should check out called Primary Care Reimagined with Subscription-Based Preventative Care Model. It's an inspiring call for a paradigm shift in primary care. All of their episodes highlight innovative ideas at the forefront of the movement to transform our healthcare system. Check out Medicine in America on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Highway to Health. I'm Jeremy Quinby. This is episode 127 of the podcast. If you're new to the show, I want to welcome you. Highway to Health is your place for trusted health guidance and support. Whether you're looking to improve your health or just seeking ways to stay well, we're here for you. This growing community is on a mission to improve our state of being and experience together on the planet. So this is a topic today that I've been hoping to cover for a while. And through my relationship with the Upledger Institute in Florida, founded by one of my heroes in holistic care, Dr. John Upledger, I was able to be introduced to Ann Wister, who's been involved with dolphin-assisted therapy and seminars for nearly 20 years. My curiosity with this topic is to better understand the relationship between dolphins and humans and what we seek from healing partnerships in general. As human health practitioners, it's easy for our egos and desire to help others get in the way, especially in cases of chronic or terminal conditions where healing happens at its own pace and many times in ways that are beyond the scope of the traditional Western medical model. The idea that Dr. John Upledger came up with is for dolphins to lead the therapeutic experience. It's easy to believe as humans that we are superior and have investigative minds that can sort through all of the science and solve all of our own problems with it. Considering the state of life on the planet at the moment, I think we might be better served to listen more closely to nature and how it communicates so we might better understand the wisdom it offers, which Anne shares from her very unique experience in the water with dolphins. Please enjoy my conversation with Anne Wister. How long have you been practicing craniosacral therapy?
20 years. Since 2004.
What did you do previously?
I was driving a 50-foot sailboat, actually.
Is that right? where in Florida?
Yeah.
Okay. As part of what crew, like tours or something, or?
Yeah. I'm a licensed captain, and we did dolphin watches and sunset cruises and things like that.
Golf side?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, St. Petersburg.
Okay. And so what got you interested in craniosacral therapy?
Well, I was going to go down to the British Virgin or the U.S. Virgin Islands to do week-long cruises. And a friend of mine said, oh, I just learned this. I just took this CEU and learned this treatment, and I want to give you a treatment before you go. Mm-hmm. So I got a treatment, and 10 minutes into the treatment, my whole world shifted. It's like, oh, I need to be doing this.
did something happen on a personal level? Anything you can share?
It was just kind of an aha moment. I mean, it just sort of, I'd been looking for a way to treat. One of my daughters was born 8 weeks early, and, you know, we had a lot of issues.
I totally understand that. My daughter had meningitis at 12 days old, so... Oh, wow. Spent, you know, the first month in the hospital, basically.
Yeah. Well, she's in her 40s now, so I did not have this work back then.
Yeah.
But I'd always sort of had an eye open for, okay, what is out there that I can do to help people?
Yeah.
And so when I received this treatment, it just, the light went on and it was like, ah, here it is.
Yeah. I really... I got into this work partly because I had back problems when I was young. It's really started as a teenager, and then by my mid-20s, it was pretty bad. And wow. So I ended up, I was an English major. I was planning on like a career in writing and maybe journalism, which I kind of got back to somehow here. But I just decided to enroll in massage school just to learn, because I was trying to figure out, you know, things that I could do for it. It seemed like kind of an easy one for me. I was curious about the anatomy part of things that I would learn, and probably figured I'd get a lot of body work while I was there. And, one of my teachers, while I was, you know, working, we had started kind of learning some more subtle modalities, and she came up to me afterwards and said, "You feel a lot of stuff, don't you?" So that was kind of the beginning of it for me. And she pretty much pushed me right into a craniosacral course out of school.
Nice.
So I really didn't have much of a, you know, I barely had done, you know, much with clients at that point, but almost immediately, like the first couple of days of class, you know, I appreciated like how in depth the coursework went into the kind of Western model. Excuse me. But at first I was struggling with the feel of the work and trusting what I felt. And then like 2 days in, I just had a good partner that I was working with, and she was like, "Wow." So that at that point, then, you know, that was kind of the beginning for me. And I was fortunate that I had a pretty busy practice, started almost right after out of school, with friends and family, and started picking up a few people. So I just started asking everybody if I could, you know, add a little extra time and work on them. And that was, you know, I was very fortunate to have had so much hands-on time right away.
Nice.
Did you work for anybody after you know, going through training, or did you just start treating some local people?
Well, I started treating, and I just got the massage license to do cranial. I never did massage.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And I went to Beyond the Dura that spring, and I had Chaz Perry for SER 1 and 2, I think. And I met his wife, Kat, and at Beyond the Dura. And she just came up to me and said, "There's one spot left in the Dolphin Assisted Therapy program. Go sign up now." And
wow.
I did. And I've been following that program, and I worked with Integrative Intentions, and because Chaz and Kat were one of the first people who started doing the clinic treatment, like the week-long clinic that happened at Upledger in Indiana and other places.
Okay.
So I started doing that right away. I hadn't even been practicing a year. I was still taking classes, and I went to about 5 of those a year.
Wow. And
that made a huge difference, because I was working with, you know, 30 to 40 therapists who were experienced.
And makes a huge difference. You know,
worked with Dr. John, and we had these clients that we'd work with 5 hours a day for 5 days.
Yeah, that's also another experience. And I don't always get to do that as much in, you know, my practice. Every once in a while, I have somebody who's like in a little bit more of a crisis, and I might do, you know, day after day treatment with them, but not in that sort of way with that kind of group of people. That's got to be amazing.
It is. It is. And the multi-hands is always, you learn so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just learn so much.
Yeah.
By listening to other people and listening to the dialogue and seeing what's happened, feeling what's happening with the client.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And so did you, when you were, you know, heading the cruise ships, or captaining, I guess you were, right? Did you have any like in the water experience at that point with dolphins?
No, we weren't allowed to get in the water.
Okay.
In Florida, you're not allowed to get in the water with the dolphins, and you're not allowed to feed them, which is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But they would come up to the boat, and when there would be a new baby born, we could see it because they jump and they celebrate. Mm.
Oh, wow.
And then about 2 weeks later, they will bring the baby over to the boat. And because we were there, you know, 3 or 4 times a day, every day, pretty much all year round.
Yeah.
So they knew the boats. We had 3 boats.
Yeah.
And they would sometimes, you know, they'd bring the baby over close to the boat to introduce us to the baby and the baby to the boat.
such an amazing thing. Their need to connect. I watched a couple of videos through they were Appalachia videos about their kind of wanting to like it's almost kind of a relationship that they're trying to build, and that even when they're in the water with people, it's part of their own healing experience. That's the one thing that sort of surprised me about that dialogue.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about what your experience was when you first started being in the water with dolphins with the education?
Sure. So I went down to that class that first year in 2004, and at that time we had a boat, the Dolphin Star. Appalachia had a boat, so Dr. John had asked me to go down and do this class and see if I wanted to run the boat for him.
Okay.
And after the 4 days, I didn't want to be on the boat. I wanted to be in the water with the dolphins. It was just there's such an excitement, and it is both ways. They're excited to see us as much as we're excited to see them.
Yeah.
They love being with us, and sometimes they're playful, sometimes they're serious. And they're always, when they work with the clients in the water or the students in the water, they always focus on something that we've been working on already, class or on the table. So it's really interesting to see, where they go with the client, and also to learn and feel what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long ago was that first experience for you with the dolphins?
2004. Yeah.
And did you have that sense from them right away that they were really honing in on something when you were in the water with them?
Yeah. I mean, at first just meeting them and getting in the water was exciting.
Yeah.
I'd had a little bit of dolphin contact in the water, and then I'd been around them a lot on the boats. So it's just interesting, because as craniosacral therapists, what we see and feel, that's how they live. That's where they live.
Right, right.
They live on that. They don't have the mask. They don't have the face. They don't have the behaviors that humans do. They live in that place.
Yeah.
They communicate telepathically, they play, they take care of each other, and just to see them, get serious and help people, was really profound.
And just, I think, to have the experience, I mean, you and I probably have a lot more of this experience than most people do on a daily basis, because we're entering into this relationship with someone and their body in a very quiet space. We're dealing with biorhythms within people's bodies, which I know sounds a little out there, but basically we're working with this cerebrospinal fluid tied within the body, and the way it relates to the other physical flow systems of the body with the fascia and everything. And so we get a pretty good sense of like the vibrational quality of bodies, of the rhythms of bodies and that kind of stuff. And like you're saying, that's the space they live in all the time. I mean, that's they're not processing in any other way except for at that level. Right. And so when there's something about having that experience that I think would be a very important thing for just about anyone on the planet to know that's like that very base level of the intelligence of life on the planet that I think most people don't get to have that kind of experience day to day. We're so stuck in this fixing monkey mind kind of mentality that we can't really drop down into that level, which is what you and I are kind of engaging people with daily to be in that space. But I'm just curious about what happens to you then when you have that experience, with an animal on that level. And I think it can happen with, people have that experience, I think, with their pets at home, with, you know, horses and those kinds of things as well. But I'm wondering if there's anything different and unique that you've picked up about that dolphin experience.
Yeah. Because you're in the water, there's a whole different flow, you know, like nature and woods and forests and plants and horses and dogs and cats and all the animals that we work with or play with. There is that loving connection. And then you add water to that, and there's just a flow. Like sometimes one or two of the dolphins will just go under the whole group of us standing in the water, that we're standing in the water supporting the clients, mm-hmm. holding them in the water. Yeah. And it's very salty, so they float easily.
Okay.
And the dolphins will just go under, and they'll, in a very smooth, beautiful, flowing way, and they'll blow bubbles all the way along. And what people say afterwards about the experience that they had, you know, not only are we there participating and watching the experience, but then we get to hear what people say afterwards about what they were experiencing lying in the water with their eyes closed. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they'll just be away from the whole group, and they'll be using the melon, and they'll just send the sonar. They'll make waves, they'll jump and make ripples. It's like really everything they do is purposeful, even if it's playful.
Yeah. And what I think people don't realize about that part is that there's an energetics to water, you know, in and by itself, right? The physical power that a wave can make, obviously we see it in its extremes with hurricanes and stuff, but that those little ripples, I mean, we see them happen on the table with people where a little shift will happen, and sometimes there'll be a vibration or looks like a little muscle spasm and release that kind of shakes through the body. But in the water, there's much more of a flow state. And on a table, you have the barrier of the table that doesn't allow for this sort of like, you know, flowing kinetic movement to happen. But when you're in water, that stuff is just moving right through you, as we are, you know, mostly comprised of water, right?
Yeah. And that's one thing, because we also do sessions in a pool or sometimes in the ocean. And as we're learning how to work, to be in the water and treat in the water. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things can happen because you can move your body any way you want.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The body can release in any way that it needs to. You know, sometimes people will roll or do somersaults. And sometimes we'll just be lying there, a student will just be lying in the water, and the support people will just start moving. The bodies just move.
Right, right. That's cool. So,
yeah, it's so much freer than being on the table.
Yeah. So when dolphins are, I've seen some of the video where the dolphins kind of approach with their rostrum. Is there something really specifically that they're finding by being, you know, I mean, they were like nose right at the, you know, head sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Is there something that they're trying to get a sense of? Is that part of them treating? Because from what I've heard, it sounds like the therapists in this role really try to stay out a little bit more, right? We're not quite as interactive as we might be in a traditional craniosacral session.
Right. Basically, we're the support therapists, and we're allowing the dolphins to be the lead therapists. Mm-hmm. And yes, they do use the rostrum, and sometimes they'll come up and they'll make all sorts of little noises, high pitched or low pitched or, you know, up and down. And what the people in the water explain later is what they felt going on from that interchange,
yeah.
You know, with the dolphin and the rostrum. And sometimes they'll just put the rostrum right, like up over your shoulder, and put their whole head on a shoulder or chest, and that's the area that the person has been complaining about and is there to see if they can get help with. So many things happen, and some of them playful, and you can tell when they're serious and when they're, you know, playing. And sometimes if a person is really serious, they'll play to lighten them up. Ah. You know, they're always trying to lighten everything up, and, you know, because we're so serious. you know, that it's just beautiful to see that.
I love that. I mean, even just thinking about, you know, what the healing process is and how play needs to be sort of part of that. I mean, I try to be, even in my sessions with people, I try to use humor quite a bit, or try to use lightness, or tell stories or something sometimes, just to kind of like shift the focus. When someone's gone through a lot of, you know, health issues, you know, particularly things that are, you know, sort of hard to get a handle on, like Lyme disease or something like that, where it's like, there are a lot of little things that are sort of getting thrown off with the body. There's GI stuff, there's physical sensations or pain involved. It can get to a place where you're just so focused on trying to heal all these different things at one time that we forget about what play does in that equation, right? And dolphins just have this real natural sense of it. And like we were saying earlier, I think on some level, they're in their own healing process. They want to, you know, co-heal with us, right? That is kind of, I think, another aspect of healing that's important. I mean, and definitely in our day-to-day practices, right? That, you know, doing the work and being with the work with people is also part of our own healing process.
Yes, for the therapist to get on the table, that's a big part of what we do. We have to do our own work.
We have to.
Yeah. Because you can't treat other people if you're all stopped up in your own stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
So can you give me any like stories or anything? I've read some things about how the dolphins are also kind of good diagnosticians, being able to kind of find things that are going on with people. And then, you know, sometimes it gives the therapist a clue to like pay attention to, you know, something specifically, like they might pick up on a heart arrhythmia or something going on in the body. Have you had that kind of experience with them?
Yeah. There was a woman in one of my early classes who had some kind of blood disorder that nobody could figure out. Hmm. And she really came to the class as kind of a last resort.
Yeah.
And one of the dolphins, a dominant male at the time, came up to her and gave her a pretty good nudge in her shoulder. And then it turned out when she went home that the whole issue with the blood, and I don't remember what the diagnosis was, but that it cleared up and she just began to heal after that. They do that a lot. We've had some special needs children who come down to the program, or, you know, terminally ill children. At first they're kind of afraid because these are big animals.
Yeah, yeah.
They're 900 pounds.
That's what I was going to ask. Is there any sort of danger ever?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
No, these are wonderful, you know, beautifully kept dolphins. They're dolphins in human care, and the trainers are extremely fond of them.
Yeah.
And they have a wonderful relationship. They have a 9-acre lagoon that is their home. And they also get to go out into the ocean every day if they want.
Okay.
For just what they call straight line swimming.
Yep.
So they can just go for as long as they want.
Because they need the exercise, basically, right? I mean, that's sort of also what keeps them well, I imagine.
Right. Yeah. And that, you know, just getting out, they are kind of afraid of the sounds, especially the young ones are afraid to go out because they're not used to the boat sounds and stuff. Yeah. You know, they were raised in this huge, quiet lagoon.
Supported, yeah.
Yeah. But they do try and encourage them to go out into the ocean and have that. And sometimes they'll have an encounter with a wild pod of dolphins.
Hmm.
And, you know, they all intermingle and get along.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But they always come back. They during the hurricanes, they legally have to let them loose. They have to let the gates open.
Yeah.
Because if the water were to drain out of there, they wouldn't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
And they always come back. They're always waiting right there when the trainers come back.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's their home. You know, they're well fed, they're well cared for. They love the interaction with humans.
Yeah.
And you know, that's their home.
What do people come, you know, like people seeking, you know, that experience with the dolphins, are there specific things that people tend to come for? Does it feel to you kind of more in the like physical realm, the more mental, emotional, or kind of spiritual, you know, experience that they're looking to seek? And is there anything that you've seen it be like particularly helpful with?
Yeah, all of the above, really. One thing people come for is they've always had the dream of swimming with the dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear that a lot, but it's pretty much the same as with craniosacral therapy. You know, we work with PTSD, we work with car accidents, concussion mm-hmm. is a big one, cancer. Just anybody who has that big change in their life, whether it's a healing crisis or an awakening or a divorce or,
yeah.
you know, a big
yeah.
life change,
yeah.
losing a mate or a parent or
yeah.
a child. So it's pretty much the same thing we see. And most of the people who come down are clients of a craniosacral therapist in their country.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, every now and then somebody just finds us online and shows up,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But, and yes, that we have a meeting at the beginning of every week. And then we have a meeting every morning for people to talk about their experience and ask questions. And then we have a meeting at the end. And the difference between the beginning meeting and the ending meeting is always profound.
Yeah.
You know, just profound. And everybody falls in love with the dolphins.
Yeah.
They're so loving and fun and kind, and they meet everybody where they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody is serious and wants to fix this, then that's what they'll do. And if somebody just wants to, you know, lighten their heart and play with them, and you know, that's what they'll do.
Yeah. It sounds a lot like our courses in some ways. It's like our when we come together at the beginning of the class compared to what the end of the class ends up looking like, right? With the relationships that get built.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And I think it is that it is the connection. I mean that connection is kind of the bridge out of these, you know, very challenging periods, sometimes a stressful period or a time of transition, right? I mean, I've done a lot of work with, because I treat newborns. I've done a lot of work with adoption and fostering, you know, with parents. And I always find it to be like one of the most amazing experiences that, you know, they're living with the child all the time, right? But when they bring them in for a treatment and they kind of get to be there, and sometimes I'll get the parents involved and have them be a little hands-on with me. And I do feel like I'm just creating this bridge into the family in some way, right? I'm just trying to like support that, you know, because we don't always know what happened with that, you know, child in transition. So, you know, I'm always thinking about, I'm trying to bridge this transition and create this, you know, kind of, you know, nice warm space for them to sort of, you know, maybe to shed some of the stressors and anxiety that have been kind of built up in their system. But I also feel that with the parents, I can just see the letdown happen in their bodies. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like people feel safe and they feel loved and they feel part of, you know, so there is that connection. And then there's this extra added special connection with the dolphins, who are so open and loving and accepting, mm-hmm. that, you know, there's not that wall and that fear and that, oh, well, you know, that we have as humans so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of people come back just to see a particular dolphin that they've just had such a connection with.
Wow. And to be part of, you know, part of, you know, humanity that we are in all the time, but then also part of this natural world that we lose connection with so easily. I mean, when I lived in New York for 13 years, so that was always one of my struggles there, was that I, you know, you're on concrete and, you know, sidewalks and stuff all the time. You start to, unless you really, you know, make the effort to get out, you know, and immerse yourself in nature, you start to forget about the fact that you are actually living on a planet. So that's, it feels like, you know, to have that relationship with an animal, you know, we might have them in our homes, you know, but if we're in an urban environment, we don't necessarily relate our pet to nature. But when you're floating in water with a dolphin, it's got to be a pretty profound, you know, sense of that.
It is. It's a bigger, you're not even aware that you're floating in the water with the dolphins. You're just in a space, yeah. In a big space. Yeah. And to see these kids who are at first can be, you know, not so sure and frightened, but especially with some of the nonverbal kids, mm-hmm. they just start expressing. They just start making sound, and the dolphin come up and mirror their sound.
Is that right?
So the child will, you know, make the sounds that they can make, and the dolphin will come up and make that exact sound back to them. And then this conversation begins.
Yeah.
We're all in tears, you know.
Oh my God. Well, that's what's amazing to me is, you know, and dolphins aren't the only creatures that can, you know, respond in this way. We have a cat who likes to mimic our daughter's sound when she was a baby. Like to get attention, I think sometimes, right? But just that mm-hmm. that these animals are seeking that connection, that they're putting that effort into, you know, making a connection with this little person is kind of an amazing thing. And the why,
yeah.
You know, the why for me is, yeah. Like I that's probably what brings the tears, right?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty clear that they see or feel that this child needs to be heard, and they're just there.
Yeah.
Letting them know that they're hearing them, you know, by talking back. And it's the parents too are just thrilled.
Yeah.
You know, just thrilled. So.
That's the instinct, that's their instinct. I mean, I guess not every animal has that instinct to want to be, you know, engaged and helpful. I mean, you and I, yeah. As humans have decided to, you know, we picked up that part about ourselves that we need to be engaged with that, which is a complicated relationship sometimes to, like, I can't remember who it was. I think maybe it was Stan Jerome. We took a course with him, one of the first advanced courses, and he came into the class early on and said, I want everyone to realize and to acknowledge the fact that we're all in this field because we have some codependency issues. Which my initial instinct was like, what are you talking about? I'm here to help people, right? But then you start realizing there's a lot more behind that as far as what we need, you know, in that process too. But I think there is a lot of that that is innate in creatures that we want to be in, you know, that's part of wanting to be connected. It's not necessarily always about, you know, that we have some major issue going on, but that wanting to help, and that it, you know, it can be as simple as, you know, mimicking somebody's, you know, expression and wanting them to, you know, feel good about themselves.
Yeah, and the dolphins have that connection in their species. Mm-hmm. You know, they're in their pod, no matter how many of them there are in the pod, they're all moving together. If you've ever seen a large pod of dolphins,
yeah.
in the ocean, by hundreds, they can move, and they all, you know, there's such a flow to it, like those thousands of birds in the mm-hmm. sky.
Yeah.
They all move together. and it's not a conscious thought. It's the way they be.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is something that humans really need to practice, you know.
That's for sure. Yeah. And I think our culture is just kind of getting further from that. We just don't have the opportunities as much to do that. And it was one of the concerns I had through COVID was that people were starting to lose that physical, that sense of what it's like to be physical in physical space together. And even though we don't, you know, I'm a musician and I would, you know, am a regular concert goer. I like to be sort of in the crowd of people. You know, I think there's something about being in that space with that energy and everything that's like one of the best parts for me. But to lose that, and even to lose, you know, people working in workspaces together and working from home instead, just feels like there's some losses going on there that I think we should pay attention to and make sure that we are kind of staying in this kind of, like, you know, the innate things that sort of happen once you get used to being in a, you know, as you were saying earlier, you said they have kind of a telepathy. I think we have a lot of the same, you know, gifts. We just don't use them, or we're not required to use them as much for our day-to-day processes, where, you know, they need it for protection and for coexisting in a lot of different ways.
Right. And even this small pod, like, sometimes there's like 15 dolphins at this facility, and even within the facility where they're safe and they're fed and they have human interaction, they still have those behaviors. They still have those protective, they protect each other. Like one time there was a drone, you know, people had sent it over, and one of the dolphins tried to jump up and get this drone, you know, and then when it like moved and flew away, they all just went to a corner away from it. And then the, you know, the trainers took care of it.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so beautiful because there's newborns too that come, and they don't, the dolphins are allowed to come into the space. They're not forced, they're chosen. You know, the trainers pretty much see who wants to do what that day, and they'll come of their own. And the space that we're in has floating sidewalks around it, and then a cement platform that we stand on.
Okay.
And it drops down to 12 feet, and dolphins can go and come as they please.
Okay.
They're not stuck in there having to be with us.
Yeah.
They can go and jump and do whatever they want, and then come back and work with us when they want. And when they have babies, after about 6 or 7 months, they'll, because the babies stay with the mom for, yeah, and the aunts for like 4 years.
Okay.
And so they'll have the babies come in too. And she's not a grandmother, she's a great, great grandmother. but she would take the babies as the mothers were in there, you know, interacting with us and the clients.
Mm-hmm.
She was the dominant
matriarch.
Female.
Yeah.
Right. Matriarch. And she would teach the babies, you know, you could see, she would like aim her sonar at someone, and then the baby would like aim its sonar at the same person. And then she would just teach this baby. And it was so beautiful to see, because we don't teach them to treat, and the trainers don't teach them to treat.
That's amazing.
That was one of the first things that Dr. John worked with, was like, we don't want any behaviors. We don't want them being told what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
We want them just to do what they do, and we want to learn from them.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Is there any difference? But I mean, are there specific dolphins that are more inclined to come up on a regular basis, and when the ones who don't come up as often come up, is that usually significant in some way?
Yes. There's some that just really love to be with us and love to interact and help. Mm-hmm. And then there's some that ask for us to help them.
Hmm.
Like 50% of pregnancies do not end in baby dolphins.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So even in the wild, and especially, you know, when they're under human care. So when a dolphin has lost a baby, there's two in particular that would come to us and mm-hmm. pretty much ask, you know, just present her abdomen and really ask for some help.
For you to interact with them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we do that, but not in the sessions, you know, or with the student.
Right.
And then we have the females who come and interact with us.
Okay.
Last year we had a couple of the young males and yes, there was a specific reason. It seemed like, that this one male came in and worked with us during a 1 week session. And he made a powerful connection with a couple of people and they felt that it was really significant that he was there with his energy, which is young male energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is different. Not harmful in any way, just different.
And did it seem like he was coming in for some of his own needs or more because he felt there was a need for him?
Hard to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was insistent that he come in. The trainers were trying to, you know, keep him out of the big enclosure. There's a big floating sidewalks, and then there's the little one that we work in. And he wasn't having it. He was coming in. You know, it's like, nope, I'm coming in. And it was profound, you know, just the energy that he brought and the group that we had. And there were a couple of 20-year-old men in that group who obviously needed his energy.
Yeah. You know?
So I think
that's fascinating.
Yeah. 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 The dynamics. And then sometimes like the dolphins and the trainers have such beautiful relationships, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes the dolphins, you know, just go with the program and do everything. And sometimes they really don't.
they can misbehave.
Yes.
Are the trainers kind of like parents in that situation then? Is that kind of what they
use them? A little bit,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. More like an older brother. Older
okay.
Sister.
Okay.
and they don't, the trainers don't fight it. I mean, if the dolphin is really not going to do this, then they'll say, okay, nope, he's not going to do this.
Yeah.
And they're really good like that. They know that there's something other than just, you know, like you are with a dog, you know, there's a reason that they're doing or not doing
this
particular behavior.
Yeah.
So that's interesting too, to watch the dolphin trainer relationships.
That was the one thing. I hadn't had a dog for a long time until about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I've had cats for a lot of my adult life, which, you know, they're such different creatures. They're very aloof, and then they come in when they, you know, when they want to, when they feel like it, and then sometimes you want to pet them and they're not into it. But with dogs, it's such a different kind of, we hired a trainer because I wanted to make sure, like, I understood, you know, them a little bit better too. And that dogs have this need to please a little bit on some level. Like they want to be told that they're good and they want to, you know, do certain kinds of things and that there's an order to that that's important for them, that it creates a kind of boundary and protection for them to know that, okay, my owner is in charge now and I don't have to, you know, like when I travel for work once in a while and when I'm gone, our dog is on alert all the time and he doesn't really get to rest. He feels like he has to protect the house. He has to like be constantly monitoring. And when I come back, he just comes next to me and lays down and just exhausted. Like, finally, I don't, because I'm apparently the alpha in the house. So it's interesting how that those kind of relationships work. Do dolphins feel more akin to like the way dogs are in that respect? Do they want to please, or is it a very different kind of animal experience?
It's different. Yeah, it's different. They can help, so they're not doing it because we ask for it or we need it. They're doing it because they're able to do it. Hmm. And to me, it seems that it's easy for them to share.
Okay.
And they do get something out of it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say dolphins are codependent.
Right. And are they reward driven? Is like, in terms of training, you know,
because they're dolphins under human care, they get their fish, they get a certain amount of fish every day, yeah, no matter what.
Yeah.
And this fish is flown in from Iceland or some place and hand picked over, and it's like the best of the best.
Okay.
And they know they're going to get that whole cooler full of fish,
yeah,
during the day. But that is how they train them, with whistles and with the reward of a fish, yeah, for doing it right. But that's one of the things that the dolphins kind of play along with. And if they don't want to do what they're being asked to do, you know, they don't do it no matter what the trainer's.
Right.
So it doesn't happen much, but, you know, it happens. And usually they love to play. So they love to, you know, go and do the jumps and do the stuff, and swim with the tourists and, you know, all this stuff. They like to do that because, yeah, it, you know, and every now and then it seems like, yeah, maybe they're sort of bored and, yeah, and stuff. And that's why they like us so much, because we're like a whole new, you know, a whole new group with whole new interesting stuff going, yeah, on.
And a different kind of energy. And maybe that's part of the draw, like the reward for them to be part of the healing process. If we're going to say there's any reward for them, is that energetic interaction that they get to, you know, have that feel for.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's really, nice. It's, and also that, how long do you know has this kind of interaction been going on as far as dolphins? Have you, is there anything you've studied as far as like when, you know, the training or the therapeutic, you know, aspect of dolphins? How far back it goes?
It goes back pretty far. I mean, there's lots of stories if you start looking back of, you know, dolphin dog connection, dolphin boy connection, dolphins rescuing people. In Australia, and Ireland, they have dolphins that just come, wild dolphins that just come hang out at, yeah, the beaches and interact with people.
Yeah, so that's probably been going on for centuries, I'm guessing.
I think so. Back in Egypt, there were little tunnels just where the water could come all the way in.
Mm-hmm.
And one person was thinking that they had dolphins that came into the pyramid or the house or whatever it was.
Wow.
They just had access that way. They just had their channels that they could come in.
So there already was this sense of being able to, you know, domesticate a little bit that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or just communicate with. They're just smart.
Right. You know?
They're smart and they have a lot to teach us.
Yeah. As I would say, a lot of animals do. I mean, I think we've become, you know, sort of dominators of nature as humans because of our opposable thumbs and our brains and stuff. But I don't think we're necessarily smarter than, you know, these creatures either. I've always kind of taken that point of view. And animals know too. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I've, you know, experienced. And I've done some treating of animals too, but you have to really just meet them at that place. I feel it's very similar with babies, to be honest. You know, yes. I don't go into treating a baby thinking this is a less than creature. You know, I feel like I'm immediately going to drop down to whatever that level is and where they need me, probably like dolphins do. You know, yeah. I just find that's kind of where I get things to happen. And if I'm not in that space, you know, babies pick up on that right away. You know, and it's been interesting too with working with masks. You know, I didn't until 3 years ago. I didn't treat babies with masks, and so to see the, you know, even to see that they still, you know, they still look for connection. I still get smiles wearing a mask. That's not something I would have expected.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for sharing this with me. And part of the reason I wanted to talk to you too is because I really want to come down there. So
yes.
I you know, we've been talking about kind of getting me to the Institute for some things, and maybe this will just be an excuse for me to come down. And if next winter is anything like this winter has been in Minneapolis, I'm definitely out of here.
And the thing to do is to come to a class and then stay for a therapy program.
Okay.
Or if you have a client who wants to come as a client.
Yeah.
Then you can come for free and just, you have to take a couple classes before you can actually be a support therapist. But
gotcha.
If your client's there, you can come to the program and be there with your client and you can work on your client.
Oh, that's good to know. That'd be great, actually.
Yeah.
And it'll be nice to hang out with you and meet you in person, too. A good excuse.
Yeah, look forward to it.
All right. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this, Anne. I really appreciate
it. Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
Anne Wister, folks. There's something about the gentleness and the curiosity of dolphins that's always drawn me into them. The conversation we just had here gave me more than a nudge to get down there and learn more about them and hopefully have an opportunity to interact with them. It was also a great reminder of the simple, loving, accepting relationships we have with creatures on the planet, including the ones we've domesticated to live with us in our homes, and of the respect that they deserve. If you love the dialogue and resource you get here at Highwood Health, maybe you'd like to become a health amplifier. While this show is a labor of love for me, your contributions are incredibly helpful for helping us build the content that we've been creating since 2017. You can become a sponsor for the price of a cup of coffee by going to patreon.com/highwaytohealth. Your support's greatly appreciated. Let me know what you thought of this topic and conversation. You can reach out to me anytime at jeremy@highway2.health. Thanks for listening and for all that you do. Be good to yourself, be kind to each other, and take care of your planet. Be well, my friends.
If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Medicine in America, hosted by Anthony Manson and Todd Harrington, shares the stories of physicians, other healthcare professionals, and industry leaders who are changing the way we deliver care. There's an episode that you should check out called Primary Care Reimagined with Subscription-Based Preventative Care Model. It's an inspiring call for a paradigm shift in primary care. All of their episodes highlight innovative ideas at the forefront of the movement to transform our healthcare system. Check out Medicine in America on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.